right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. Reports suggest that 132 people were injured. One person was killed after a grenade attack in Ethiopia as Ethiopia's prime minister's office or prime minister was giving a speech at a rally. The office says that no one was killed during that rally. Ethiopia's new prime minister had just finished his speech at the rally when the explosion occurred. U.S. President Donald Trump demonstrated Friday that there is no strategic shift to his overall tough approach to those attempting to illegally enter the country, vowing to end the immigration crisis once and for all. U.S. immigration laws, Trump declared, are the weakest in the history of the world. He made the remarks Friday where he presided over an event with so-called angel families, those who have had relatives killed by people who have entered the country illegally. Mr. Trump, in his remarks, also suggested that those illegally in the United States commit more crimes on a statistical basis than citizens or resident aliens. Meanwhile, AP correspondent Ben Fox toured a facility in Miami where more than 1,000 teenage migrants are being held. He says it does not look like a prison.
What they're trying to show is this is not a detention facility in the sort of traditional sense, right? So there are fences surrounding this place, but there's no razor wire. And there are guards at all the entry points, but they're not armed. The kids sleep in bunk beds, in steel bunk beds, in dorm-like rooms, right? So the doors have been removed, but the lights go out at night and there are no cameras.
President Trump is threatening to impose a 20% tariff on vehicles assembled in the European Union and shipped to the United States. This is in retaliation for European tariffs on American imports. Auto industry experts say such tariffs could negatively impact both economies. This is VOA News. Senior U.S. leaders officially canceled joint military exercises the U.S. and South Korea have held for decades, as the de-thawing between the United States and North Korea continues.
It's baffled some allies as they're designed to keep forces at a state of readiness. The troops are regarded as some of the most battle-ready in the U.S. military. Meanwhile, they've started moving caskets to North Korea to recover the remains of soldiers that were killed there during the Korean War. Kim had promised to help return the bodies at the summit. And North and South Korea have agreed to arrange reunions for some families that were separated in the conflict. They will take place in August and 100 participants will be selected from each side. They're dramatic moves from all parties in a very short period of time.
That's Reuters' Leah Jakobiak reporting. Residents in Turkey head to the polls to cast ballots in an election that could unseat the current president. Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda has a preview.
When Turkey goes to the polls on Sunday, these voters might be facing the most important election of their lives because it's become the biggest challenge in years for President Tayyip Erdogan, their most successful and most polarizing leader in power for 15 years.
We want to embrace a life where secularism, freedom, and women exist. We don't want to live repressed.
Pelin Parlak didn't tell us who she'll vote for, but Erdogan and his Islamist political party are anti-abortion, anti-birth control, and have faced criticism on gender equality issues.
Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is gravely concerned by the recent military escalation, including ground offensives and aerial bombardments in southwestern Syria. Guterres has called for an immediate end to the current military escalation and urges all stakeholders to respect their obligations under international law and international humanitarian law. Jordan brokered a ceasefire agreement in southern Syria between the U.S. and Russia in July of 2017, but the Syrian government has not agreed to the de-escalation agreement, despite the fact that its ally, Russia, was a party to the deal. The Syrian government continues to drop leaflets in the area, giving armed opposition two choices. That's to surrender or die. Nikki Haley, the United States ambassador to the United Nations, said Thursday a UN report on poverty within the country was ridiculous. The UN report released earlier this month highlighted economic inequality and claimed policy pursued by the Trump administration would exacerbate the country's wealth gap, further hurting poor people. More on VOANews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
They ask those people not to protest in their name because they are satisfied with the assurance given to them by the president. And they said that we are lost, cannot be brought back, but they will wait for the investigation and see what will happen.
Gambian President Adama Barrow demands an investigation into clashes that left three people dead and six others injured.
We want those elections to be free and fair for everybody. And before the elections, we want freedom for everybody. We want the agreement that we have signed under the CENCO being in process.
The Democratic Republic of Congo's main opposition party welcomes sanctions and visa bans on top Congolese officials.
We know that there is no national army in South Sudan, there is no national police service, there is no national security. We are talking about new security establishment. But the government insists that they will continue with their militia army, which has been.
And the South Sudanese Information Minister says Dr. Riek Machar will not be part of President Salva Kiir's government. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Gambian President Adama Barrow has demanded an investigation into clashes between Faraba community residents and the police that left three people dead and six others injured Monday. It came after the president established a committee to investigate the circumstances surrounding the death of the Faraba residents. The incident forced the Inspector General of the Gambian Police to resign. Meanwhile, opposition groups demand the government to provide answers to questions, including who ordered the police to use live bullets during the incident at Faraba. For more, I reach Omar Wale, an independent Gambian journalist in the capital, Banjul.
The incident happened on Monday when protesters and paramilitary forces had a confrontation. And during the process, they opened fire, killing three people and wounding several others, including 16 police officers and six civilians. So also the protesters set a fire on five trucks, two caterpillars, and several other compounds also were set ablaze. So that is what happened on that day.
Has investigation officially begun into what led to the clashes that left some dead and several injured, including police officers?
Yes. As we speak, five police officers have been suspended and their services also have been suspended. And the investigation, they mount an investigation into the case. You may also remember that the Inspector General of the Gambia Police Force also resigned as a result of the incident. Because when the incident happened, the police command disbanded themselves, saying they did not authorize the use of firearms. But that raised questions. Many Gambians started asking who gave order to the paramilitary and who also stationed the paramilitary at the village. So that also raised a question. So as we speak, an investigation is being mounted into the case.
Has a new Inspector General of Police been appointed by the president after he visited?
Not yet. The Deputy Inspector General of Police is overseen until the new Inspector General is appointed.
What is this problem with sand winning that led to this deaths and injury?
According to the villagers, the company that was mining Julake came to their village without their consent and connived with the village head, locally known as Alkalo, and few other individuals. So the village development community, locally known as VDC, protested because they said it's going to destroy their environment. And this thing has been going on for several months. But it could not be resolved until this incident happened. When the villagers came out on Monday, they barricaded the trucks that were filled with sand to transport them to the main place. That was the time the incident happened.
What assurances did President Adama Barrow give to the people of Faraba when he visited them on Friday?
The first thing he did was to set up a commission into the case. And he assured them that this will not be like any other lengthy investigation. So, put quite simply, told the villagers that they will fast track this investigation and whoever is found wanting will be brought to justice.
I understand this has turned political and some opposition groups are accusing the government of failing to protect life and property of the Gambians, because that is their core mandate as enshrined in the Constitution.
Yes, the president has come under heavy criticism for not taking the right steps in putting an end to this crisis. And other opposition leaders even call on him to step aside. But he laughs at them, telling them they should not use this thing as a political ploy. All the main political parties visited the scene when the incident happened, and Barrow was the last to visit the place on Friday. And that even the religious leaders, security personnel, the party leaders from other political parties visited the scene when the incident happened.
Some, I understand, are suggesting that there has to be compensation for those who lost their lives, including even some of the security officers. What are you hearing?
Yes, the president made a mention of that. He said that in the event that those who were wounded or those who are wounded cannot be treated here, but he will facilitate or fund their overseas treatment. That assurance was given. So this includes both the security and the environmental protesters.
Are the people in Faraba satisfied with the assurances the president gave them?
Yes. They have even called on those who want to take a protest tomorrow, calling Befadoi, which means enough is enough. They ask those people not to protest in their name because they are satisfied with the assurance given to them by the president. And they said that we are lost, cannot be brought back, but they will wait for the investigation and see what will happen. And they said they are satisfied with the way things are going.
But will the protest go on as planned by the organizers?
That will happen tomorrow in the afternoon. They said they will stage a protest tomorrow and prevent their anger against the, as they call it, injustices that has been going on, foreign companies that has been exploiting Gambians and their environment.
Omar Wale is an independent Gambian journalist. He spoke with me from Banjul. The Democratic Republic of Congo's main opposition Union for Democracy and Social Progress, or UDPS, has welcomed sanctions and visa bans on top Congolese officials by the United States. The sanctions, which were announced on Thursday, are aimed at officials for corruption linked to the country's delayed elections and for rights abuses. Opposition and civil society groups expressed concern that President Joseph Kabila is unlikely to hand over power despite pressure from the international community. For more regarding the U.S. sanctions, I reach Abraham Luakabwanga, National Secretary in charge of communication for the main opposition UDPS and spokesperson for the party's leader, Felix Tshisekedi.
First of all, as a Congolese leader and as also an opposition member, we are welcoming this decision taken by U.S. government. And we are hoping that no one will be left behind, because we've seen before this new decision that some people that were not the key people were sanctioned. So, but we hope now that President Kabila, his entourage, and those people that are directly involved into the process will be sanctioned, so the message will be a clear message that's going to lead most of them, or the people that are leading the Congo today, to bring a real change and bring the Congo to the elections by December the 23rd.
So you are basically calling on the U.S. government to impose additional sanctions on President Kabila himself and his inner circle?
Yes, because he's the key. Everything actually is being organized for him to remain into power. So let's face the reality. We have to sanction person who's actually moving every strings in order to remain into power. And that person is President Kabila. And the president of the CENI, Mr. Corneille Nangaa, and those who are taking laws, or those who are using the secret services and the army. So we have to pinpoint those who are actually the key person involved into this situation that, you know, are leading Congo into trouble.
Talking about the president said at the UN General Assembly last year that there will be elections this year. Corneille Nangaa, whom I spoke with last week, was adamant that elections will be held this year after announcing the election timetable that will be used in this year's election. Why are you not confident that there will be election and that there could be smooth transfer of power from Kabila to the next person that Congolese choose to lead them?
The point is, we have to talk, what kind of elections are we talking about? Jean-Pierre Bemba has been released from ICC. He's been granted his passport. Another point, we've been talking about the machine they want to use for the election. We as opposition have been asking what is actually the software used for those kind of machines and why did they change the situation while we didn't discuss about it? Why Mr. Kananga is still arguing that without those electoral machines for voting, we won't be able to have elections. Also, we still have insecurity in some places in the country. Are we, as opposition, going to have the freedom of speech? Could we go also on national TV, national radio? Actually, we cannot talk. They are not reporting what opposition has been doing. So we want those elections to be free and fair for everybody. And before the elections, we want freedom for everybody. We want the agreement that we have signed under the CENCO being in process. Then we can say that we are going to have free and fair elections.
The chairman of the Independent Electoral Commission of Congo, or CNE, said that he is engaging with all opposition groups, including your group, to address your concerns before the elections. Why don't you think that is enough?
Because President Nanga met our party, UDPS, in April this year. We submit to him 40 questions related to the machine, and we're still waiting those answers because our technicians, our computer scientists, analysis, send, or organize, and put in place 40 questions to use one of the machine prior the election, so we could understand how it works and being sure that nothing, you know, bad is being put in place. Look, the director who was in charge of those machines, he left and resigned. What is the reason? We're still waiting because I know for sure that this gentleman will talk and will let the international opinion know that there were a vast organization by the CENI the usage of these machines to bring President Kabila or one of his guy into power by treachery.
Abraham Luakabwanga is the National Secretary in charge of communications for the main opposition UDPS and spokesperson for the party's leader, Felix Tshisekedi. He spoke with me from the capital, Kinshasa. South Sudanese Information Minister says Dr. Riek Machar, the former Affairs Vice President, will not be welcomed back to President Salva Kiir's government. Michael Makuei, however, said Machar would only be allowed to name a representative from his SPLM-IO rebel group in a transitional administration ahead of an election. The Information Minister's remarks came after the President met with Machar at a face-to-face meeting in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Meanwhile, the two leaders are expected to meet again in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. For more, I read South Sudanese Information Minister Michael Makuei in the capital, Juba.
When he decided to rebel and attempted to take over government by force in July 2016, he was the first vice president. So what were he fighting for? He was fighting for the position of the president, not for the position of the first vice president when he failed to take over by force. So here, he was not fighting for the position of the first vice president, but fighting for the position of the president. What we are saying is that the people of South Sudan have had enough of Riek Machar. During the liberation struggle, he attempted to overthrow John Deren. And when he failed to overthrow him, he decided to join Khartoum. And from them, he continued. The Riek Machar is responsible for all the lives that we have lost in South Sudan during his attempts to take over and to climb ladder of office of the president by force. What we are saying is that if he wants to be the president of the Republic of South Sudan, he should wait and go for elections. So Riek Machar is no longer the right person to come back to this government. We have no problem with him nominating a candidate to represent him in his government.
After he met with President Kiir, people are suggesting that there should be a first step to having a peace to resolve the ongoing conflict. The stance taken by the government, some are suggesting, will not end the conflict. What do you say to
what
that?
What else do you want? What do you want us to do for Riek Machar? Unless you are telling us Salva Kiir step down, let Riek Machar take over. This is the only thing which is left that we have not done. Some of you do talk without to know what are the concessions that the government has made before you talk to us about this is what the people are saying. Who are those people saying? Are you among those saying?
Oh, no, not me.
Okay, if you are not, then who are those people you are quoting?
Well, these are some South Sudanese living here in South Sudan that we spoke with.
As the South Sudan of diaspora do not know what is happening on the ground here in South Sudan. These are people who just listen over there. Let them come here to the ground to see what is happening here on the ground. They are supporters of Riek Machar. How do you quote them for me? Who are they to be quoted?
What concessions would you want the SPLM-IO to make in order to end this ongoing conflict and save
what concessions? For us, we have done all that we could. What is left now is only for people to say President Selva said step down for him. This is the only thing which is left. Otherwise, we have done everything that is usually done by any government negotiating with any group of rebels. We have given them enough to the extent that, and not that only, but people do magnify the strength of whom. You come to the ground to know exactly what is the strength, what is the size and all this of these so-called rebel groups. We are here on the ground. You should not just rely on what you see in the social media or what others tell you. You want to know, come to South Sudan, come and see for yourself.
So, Mr. Makwe, what is the way forward to resolve this ongoing conflict? What is the way forward?
The way forward is that the government should accept the reality. That is one. Number two, the mediators must call a spade whenever they see anybody going beyond demanding the impossible. It should be told. Those who keep on threatening the government with sanctions are the ones who are making the rebels to be intransigent. Because the poor guys all the time believe that whenever South Sudan, the government is threatened at the verge of collapse, and so the government will collapse so that they pick the pieces. So those who keep on threatening South Sudan with sanctions and so forth should refrain, mislead the opposition.
Michael Makwe is the South Sudanese Information Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Juba. Meanwhile, the SPLM-IO has condemned the Information Minister's pronouncement, saying it is unfortunate and regrettable. In a statement, the rebel group called for a comprehensive political settlement to end the conflict. The group also said there is need to adequately address the deep-rooted cause of the conflict. For more, I reach Manawa Peter Gatkot, the deputy chairman for the SPLM-IO's Committee for Information and Public Relations in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
I think this is one of the tactics governors are using every time. They don't have a right to prevent any citizen of South Sudan to hold an election in South Sudan. Governor of South Sudan, led by Salva Kiir, they want to show the world that the problem, the crisis in South Sudan, is between Dr. Riek Machar and Salva Kiir, which is wrong. We in the SPLM-IO are saying that the country needs a critical reform in aspect of economic and security sector and even constitutional. There's a lot of things we need to change it in South Sudan. It's not about Dr. Riek Machar or Salva Kiir. This idea of isolating politicians from participation in development of South Sudan, I think, is one of the issues that bring crisis in South Sudan. We reject this idea because we don't think they have a constitutional right to prevent Dr. Riek Machar to hold any position in South Sudan.
The government blames Dr. Riek Machar for this recent upsurge in conflict, and that the Dr. Riek Machar doesn't even have the weight, and that he shouldn't even be given a table in the first place, since he is the cause of this ongoing conflict. He shouldn't be rewarded for it.
I think this is wrong, because if Dr. Riek Machar is weak and doesn't have political support in South Sudan, how could you explain more than 4 million refugees from South Sudan that are outside the country? Even inside the Juba, more than 600,000 that are running from the government to seek a protection from UNMISS. I think this is wrong. If Salva Kiir have political support from the citizens of South Sudan, they should not run away from his control area to area controlled by SPLM-IO. I think this is wrong. Number two, Dr. Riek Machar didn't cause any problem. If you look to the report of accident of July 2016, if you get the report from Security Council, they confirm that the accident of July, Dr. Riek Machar has nothing to do with it. It's planned by Salva Kiir and his former General Chief of Staff, Paul Malong Awan. So the one who create the problem in South Sudan, he self-secured himself, not Dr. Riek Machar.
You are aware that the government maintains that Dr. Riek Machar attempted a coup d'etat which led to the conflict, which led to him running away from Juba to seek medical attention out of the country.
Riek Machar has been under house arrest for the last 2 years. He's not participating in anything in South Sudan, but the fight is still going on. The accident of July 2016, the accident of 2013, Zelfakir himself is the one who provoked the coup against the government. The problem once Dr. Riek Machar raised six issues that we need to address it in this SPLM so we can reach a peaceful and we can develop our country. One of the issues Dr. Riek Machar raises is corruption in South Sudan, insecurity, nepotism and tribalism, lack of vision. There is no economic agenda in South Sudan. If we don't address these issues, then the country will collapse. After 2 years, really, the country will collapse because Zelfakir doesn't want to fight all these things. He's talking always about corruption, nepotism, but he's always improved and he won't protect those who are looting the money in South Sudan. But I think this is not true. He's the one who caused all this problem.
So what is the way forward to resolve this ongoing conflict? Because obviously a lot of South Sudanese have been affected. They have been displaced from their homes. Some have been killed, all because of a political fallout which could be resolved amicably. The government has taken a stance. What concession is the SPLM-IO willing to make to ensure this problem is solved once and for all?
Actually, since the 2016 accident, we have been talking to the international community, to the IGAD. We need to restore peace in South Sudan. But the problem, the government came to the peace talk with the mandate that they don't want to sign any agreement with the other opposition party. If you look to the last bridging gap proposal from the IGAD, you can see from the details that the government still wants to just to control everything. They are talking about in the power sharing, for example, they are talking about 85% for the government, and 10 for the SPLM-IO, and 5 for the other opposition, which is not realistic. Number two, if you are looking into the outstanding issues, especially in the security arrangement, we know that there is no national army in South Sudan, there is no national police service, there is no national security. We are talking about new security establishment. But the government insists that they will continue with their militia army, which has been recruited in South Sudan, which is commit crime against humanity, which is still abusing the people of South Sudan.
Manawa Peter Gatkuoth is the deputy chairman for the SPLM-IO's Committee for Information and Public Relations. He spoke with me from Addis Ababa. Since his election, Tanzanian President John Magufuli has closed several critical newspapers while rights groups have protested against the imposition of new restrictive laws on freedom of expression. On Thursday, the East African Court of Justice said Tanzania must annul the publication ban placed on a local weekly newspaper 2 years ago. Mseto was suspended after the government accused the newspaper of publishing incitement and fake news. Max Mello is the founder and director of Jamii Media, a whistleblowing site. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him by phone in the commercial capital Dar es Salaam for his reaction regarding the court ruling.
Honestly, I feel like this is a relief to the media fraternity because we have been trying to see if we can get justice through the courts in Tanzania, but through the East African Court of Justice, this is the first victory of its kind, and I don't think it's from a wheel, I mean set of ourselves. It's for all of us in the media fraternity at large.
You yourself has been at the receiving end of what the court called violation of the right of freedom of expression.
Yes.
How does the court ruling make you feel? Do you think it would help even in your case?
I don't feel like there is any kind of relation because the cases that we are facing are quite different. As far as authorities are forcing us to reveal identities of our sources of information or stories,
And for Mawio, it was about the publication which was alleged to be threatening the national security. So there is a huge difference. But again, anything that happens to any media house or any publication, which is positive, I take it as a positive sign towards media freedom and the freedom of expression.
Yeah, but the two of them, why I ask the question is, both of them relate to these restrictive laws that have been put in place.
Exactly. And yes, to some extent, for us, you know, there is a big difference between online publications and offline publications. For the online freedom, there are lots of laws which are formulated, let me say, or enacted, and they're also affecting the traditional media. So generally, this case in Arusha makes a huge difference following the recent kind of trends in Tanzania.
What do you think the reaction of the government will be? Do you think they'll abide by the court ruling?
That's my worry. I still believe they will, but I'm still worried, like, as long as they might respect the ruling, they might come up with yet another story to make sure that once the publication is back to publication, it will be banned through another kind of, or they might use another law, or they might come up with another allegation against them.
How has the government so far reacted?
They haven't reacted so far.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, bacteria may be helping stir up anxiety and depression in obese people if results from a new study on mice hold true in humans. The research raises questions about whether changing gut microbes or changing diet could help treat these conditions. VOA Steve Baragona has more from Washington.
Obesity triggers changes in metabolism. Left untreated, these changes can lead to diabetes. Obese people also have higher rates of anxiety and depression.
One could say, well, maybe that's just because they're overweight or obese, but others could say, well, maybe there's actually a metabolic link.
Ronald Kahn studies diabetes at Harvard Medical School.
We asked the question of, well, maybe the metabolic link could be at least partly fueled by the microbiome.
The microbiome is the community of bacteria, fungi, and other microbes living in your gut. It changes with your diet, and Kahn says those changes may affect both body and mind. To test the theory, Kahn and colleagues fed mice a high-fat diet and studied their behavior as the animals became obese. For example, they put mice in a box divided into a dark section and a light section. Anxious mice prefer to spend time in the dark.
And a mouse on a high-fat diet will spend more time in the dark than a mouse on a normal chow diet will. So they have more sign of anxiety.
The anxiety went away when the mice were given antibiotics. That suggested bacteria were helping make the mice anxious. The researchers then wanted to see if they would produce the same effect by transferring gut bacteria to animals raised in a sterile environment with no microbes of their own. It worked. Microbes from obese mice made germ-free rodents anxious. Microbes from obese mice given antibiotics did not.
It was actually quite a surprise. I must say, even though we had seen some effects on metabolism, I was very surprised how dramatic and how clear the effects were also on the brain and on behavior.
The work appears in the journal Molecular Psychiatry. However, Kahn says the research does not mean antibiotics are the cure for depression. The drugs kill good and bad microbes indiscriminately, and misuse is already making these important medicines less effective. Also, what happens in mice does not necessarily happen in humans, he adds, or it may only happen for some people. Plus, there is much more going on with people than just their microbes, says mental health researcher Gregory Simon at Kaiser Permanente Washington Health Research Institute.
The difficulty is that both of these things, depression and obesity, are complicated things that have multiple factors influencing them.
He says genetics, environment, social influences, and our microbes, all these and more help shape us and our behavior. Meanwhile, Kahn and colleagues are working to figure out exactly which of the hundreds of species of gut bacteria are affecting mood. At the moment, it's a mystery. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Let them know they're missing out. Sing again. Hey. It's for all the love and the life took away. F. Don't forget we were bought and trade. R. Ripped from the land and shipped away. Hey. Is the inspiration we use to survive. C. You have to see it with your own cries. A. Don't play at it up in a ride.
Nyanga kama dona Makonde na ndonya kama mpira Maradona
rafiki juu ya kona na wakisema na mawenge mwambie uneraso wakiringisha meremende nitakugawia kona chunga kipenzi majaribu mabaya sana oh. Na wendo dokta kunitibu niwe salama oh. Oh baby Anita macho kama unanita sasita kiuno kayo ndo sista Anita macho kama unanita sasita kiuno kayo ndo sista
show me show me show me unaviones show me show me show me waoneshe unaviones show me yeah show me show me unaviones show me yeah show me show me waoneshe unaviones
Nairobi, Kampala, Kigali, Zimbabwe, Kwatobi, Naija, Somali, Mwanangu wafanya rodi, Jaufucha kwa sadali, Na unyamani biobi, Bizonga kwa natali.
Unaviones
Thank you.
Here's a song that comes from Tanzania. Malaika, nakupenda malaika. Malaika, nakupenda malaika. Ingekuwa wa maliwe, ingekuwa wa hatata. Nashindwa na mali sina we. Roho yangu pesa, sasumbua roho yangu.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sale, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, when you are eating with the devil, you must use a long spoon. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The governments of the United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway have called on all warring parties in Darfur to lay down their arms and work with international peacekeepers to achieve a permanent peace. In 2003, armed opposition in the Darfur region of Western Sudan began an insurrection against the government in Khartoum in protest against government policies that they claimed discriminated against non-Arabic populations. The government sent troops to fight the uprising and also armed militias, the Janjaweed, to fight the rebels. But the Janjaweed were more interested in brutalizing the civilian population, resulting in a humanitarian crisis that left hundreds of thousands dead and 2 million people displaced. In 2007, a combined African Union United Nations hybrid operation in Darfur, or UNAMID, was deployed in Darfur to stabilize the region. Several ceasefire agreements were signed, as well as two peace agreements in 2006 and 2011. However, two of the major opposition groups, Justice and Equality Movement Jibril Ibrahim and the Sudan Liberation Army Abdul Wahid, or SLA-AW, refused to sign the agreement. SLA-AW has consistently rejected participation in any peace agreement, refused to declare any unilateral cessation of hostilities, and is engaged in confrontations with government forces. Hostilities began anew in March, and the government increased its troops and intensified the fighting. Finally, in mid-June, Sudanese government forces and the Sudan Liberation Movement Abdel Wahid clashed in central Darfur state, again forcing thousands of civilians to flee their villages. On June 19th, the governments of the United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway issued a written statement condemning the fighting, as well as intertribal violence in the Jebel Mara region of Darfur. The civilian population continues to bear the brunt of this unnecessary violence, which has led to the burning down of villages, causing high numbers of civilian injury and death, and the displacement of nearly 9,000 people, said the statement. There can be no military solution to the conflict in Darfur, and the international community should consider imposing sanctions against those who continue to act as spoilers. The three governments call on all parties to the conflict to immediately cease all military engagement and hostilities, allow unfettered humanitarian access, and to meaningfully engage with the African Union High-Level Implementation Panel-led peace process in order to reach a permanent ceasefire. The United States continues to engage all parties to the conflict to exercise restraint, engage in dialogue for a negotiated solution.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
From Washington.